www.radio.nz.
Welcome to Eco Living in Action, a half-hour sustainable living show with Maureen Howard. Maureen chats with a different guest each week about their sustainability activities and initiatives, from advice on tiny houses to rooftop gardens to wildlife-friendly farming practices. Maureen's guests are passionate individuals who are making a difference. Eco Living in Action, proudly supported by Taste Nature.
And kia ora. Welcome to Eco Living in Action. I'm Maureen Howard, host of this show. Electric vehicles. Now, we think of them as a modern phenomenon, but actually they've been around for, well, over 100 years. In today's show, I hope to find out more about the electric vehicle and its history, and also about the recent uptake of vehicles. Where's the most popular place in New Zealand for electric-owned vehicles? And just how easy is it to have an EV in Dunedin? Where can you charge your vehicle? What about battery technology? Is the range anxiety that people talk about still justified? And is there a potential for community or neighbourhood-owned EVs? Now, the perfect person to answer these questions is here with me in the studio today. Pam McKinley is co-convener of Dunedin Electric Vehicles Group and president for the Otago EV Incorporated Society. So welcome to the show, Pam.
Kia ora, Maureen.
Lovely to have you. I think this is the first time we've had you on the show, or this particular show anyway. Yeah. So I thought of you because I've seen that, I've seen you in your electric vehicle and your husband, but I know that you got your electric vehicle quite a long time before most people. I know we've had a recent upsurge in EVs, haven't we?
Yes, we got our electric vehicle early in 2015. When there weren't even any electric vehicle dealers in Dunedin, so it was a steep learning curve for us. And some months later, at the end of the year, I was driving along the road and I passed someone in an electric vehicle and I turned around and started chasing them, and they did the same thing, and we met and formed the Dunedin Electric Vehicles owner because we're so surprised to see each other.
That's great. I guess because it is a good way to see each other, isn't it? You can see the signs. So, and what got you interested in them in the first place?
It was Tom's was the first person that kind of saw them coming, and we went and looked at one at Autocourt and had a wee think about it, and then it sold, and then we had a wee think about it again, and then we went online and we eventually bought one from a lines company in Roxburgh, of all places.
Mm. And so people do it for different reasons. You know, they have electric vehicles maybe for economic reasons or for climate change reasons. What was your reason?
Reducing our carbon footprint. It was the biggest way that our family could reduce our carbon footprint. I've got two teenage boys and very busy after school, driving around like a mad thing like many other mums after school, sort of spending $80 to $100 a week petrol. And of course most of that petrol spend goes out your tailpipe, which I was acutely aware of, so that was one of the reasons, actually the main reason.
And it's made a good difference to your pocket, has it?
It's made a good difference to our pocket, but I didn't realise that at the time. It was having a look at electric vehicles, and I think, you know, someone had to take the first step, you know, take the plunge and show, you know, either it would work or it wouldn't work, but if it worked, then we could say, oh, yes, this works, and everyone can see that it works, because we're a busy family, and it works amazingly.
Mm. And for you, you know, like... you're an artist, and you seem to me a kind of person who loves to take on a project and kind of follow it through. You've done quite a lot of research into the history of electric vehicles. What got you into that?
Last year was 100 years celebration of MTA in New Zealand, and I knew that electric vehicles had been around for longer than 100 years, so I thought we'd do 100 years plus of electric vehicles in New Zealand. And also, we also go to Auto Spectacular every year as a car club. And so we were going there as the newest Dunedin car club, but we were going there with actually kind of the oldest kind of technology, which was kind of fun as well.
Right, and so when you looked into the history, what kind of things did you find out?
So one of the I did a lot of research around electric vehicle use in New Zealand, and Christchurch used to be the EV capital of New Zealand around the time of the Coleridge hydroelectric schemes when they were kind of in the 1920s. The Christchurch City Council was actually selling electric vehicles, mostly freight trucks. They're putting out tenders for electric people to do something with electric vehicles. They had a garage where they used to charge your trucks and freight carriers overnight. So Christchurch really was the capital of EVs in New Zealand. There's still an all-wheel truck at Orion in Christchurch, and someone that I've met through the EV community has a 1905 Baker Electric, which is still in going order, which I had a ride in last year as well at an event in Dunedin.
That's amazing, isn't it?
Yeah.
And was it quite a heavy vehicle?
No, it's amazingly spry, and I was expecting it to be a rickety old thing, and it was really not rickety. It was very smooth. It was very high off the ground. That was the thing that probably...
Because the wheels are quite large.
Yeah. So that's partly a lot of those early vehicles were really high off the ground because the roading conditions were just so atrocious. So it's like horse and carts. The wheels are so high because they're all flicking up mud and horse poo and all the rest of it. So you have to have something with a high carriage.
Right. And now an interesting thing, because when I did a little search on you on the internet, as I often do about my guests, I saw one of the talks that you gave had a focus on history of women and the electric vehicle, and I was really interested in that. Tell me a bit more about that.
That's so out of all the research I did last year, there was just one photo which really captured my attention. It's of this woman from probably about 1910, a very fashion-forward young woman, very modern, plugging in this electric vehicle. And I just spent 6 months researching just this one photo. And I discovered that there was this whole history of electric vehicles involved with women around the turn of the 19th into the 20th century. So for about 20 to 30 years around that time, there were thousands and thousands of electric cars on the road in the UK and particularly in America, and it was mostly women that drove them. And that really threw me a bit.
And so what was the reason for that?
It's such a great history. So the woman wanted to drive because there were actually around the turn of the century there was your horse and cart, there was steam, which was actually the most abundant form of private transport, and coming up behind them was the electric car, and trailing behind them was the gasoline car. And eventually, of course, steam wasn't very practical for private vehicles. It took 45 minutes to start your car and get it so you could actually drive it. And then it was just a battle after that between gasoline and electric. And gasoline cars were kind of rickety, smelly. The oil would go through them and fly up in your face. I've read a lot of talks, writing about women in the papers about just how smelly and unpleasant they found them to drive in. And it was very hard cranking them. Mm-hmm. The ignition in those old cars is hilarious when you actually read all the tips that people have for the many steps for, engaging your ignition. And this, of course, the great thing about electric cars was they had an electric starter. And, of course, eventually, as a concession to female frailty, men decided to incorporate the electric starter into a gasoline car just, to keep the ladies happy.
Right. And, of course, the men got to use it as well.
Well, you wouldn't want to admit that, would you? But there was a tension here also, because women were driving these cars, they could drive these cars, and they loved driving these cars. And But if women wanted to drive cars and could drive cars, who would know? They might want the vote. So there was a tension about trying to stop women drive these cars, and then there's all these newspaper articles about women driving these cars illegally without the right permits. To be fair, men didn't have the permits either, but so there's just this fascinating history of people trying to stop women driving the car. And we can sort of laugh about it now, but of course in Saudi Arabia, only in the last 4 weeks have women just been given the right to get a license and to be able to drive a car legally without being stoned in Saudi Arabia.
I know.
It's been amazing.
It is amazing. And yes, we take a lot for granted in our emancipation.
Just driving a car is so important to people's independence and personal mobility.
So, you know, given that there was this initial keenness and popularity of electric vehicles, what happened and to their demise, and what's reversed it?
Well, it's a really complex story. One of the things was that roading conditions actually improved around the 1920s. Also, particularly in New Zealand, though, one of the reasons why they didn't take off quite as much across the country was there wasn't as much infrastructure for electricity. So as soon as the power poles were installed and the power made available for homes for electric lighting, that's when people became more interested in anything else you could do with electricity. So we were a wee bit behind the eight ball in that sense in New Zealand. So most of my research has been for the UK and America. But they have been around since the mid-19th century. The first land speed records were set by an electric car, and it was kind of neck and neck with a gas car, steam car and petrol car for a long time.
But the, you know, like, who, you know, the movie Who Killed the Electric Car?
Yes.
You know, and, you know, for those of us who've seen it, you know, that's presenting one perspective of perhaps it being a corporate thing, but what were the reasons, do you think, that the car demise, the electric car?
So it was people's idea about range anxiety. Petrol is an amazingly compact fuel, except when you've got a fuel crisis, of course, like in the 70s or World War One or World War Two. And one of the reasons Japan's one of the world leaders in this technology is, right from World War II right through to this present day, they've actually still been manufacturing electric cars. They've never really stopped. But in the 70s, you could actually buy off-the-shelf electric cars in Dunedin. There was the Enfield. And, of course, there's always been a healthy lot of home conversions going. But the Who Killed the Electric Car was an interesting story because the EV1 was a much beloved electric vehicle, still one of the, you know, still a great electric car. The two that are still actually out there in the wild. For people that don't know the story, the EV1 was an electric vehicle that was made by General Motors. It was only leased, it was never sold, it was leased to everyone. And then there was, it is a corporate story. There was pressure to from the oil companies because they're not going to sell petrol, they're not going to sell oil for maintenance. It was great in California for the Clean Air Act because electric all manufacturers had to make a certain number of electric vehicles to actually be able to make even their petrol vehicles. There were actually 5,000 electric cars designed on the board around 1990. So it's not really a new thing. It's just where the will is.
Mm. I guess it's what we're noticing now, you know, when we look on the streets.
It is a push from the oil industries to kill off the electric car. They're afraid of losing their monopoly on transport fuel and also the revenue they would lose because EVs don't require as much maintenance and they don't require tune-ups. So that whole oil ecosystem was under threat.
So coming forward to the present now, and I guess with concerns about climate change, a lot of people have shifted towards EVs, and a market has been created, and some of the big corporations have got involved and are providing us now with EVs that, you know, that are much cheaper, relatively, yeah. and affordable, I should say. So are there any issues still? What about the batteries? Are people still concerned about range anxiety?
Yes and no. So it's like your cell phone or your computer. You know, you get what you pay for in terms of battery and longevity or capacity. So if you're buying a second-hand Japanese Gen 1 Leaf, you've got a 24-kilowatt battery there. If you're buying a new 40-kilowatt Leaf, you've got, you know, over 300 k's range. If you're buying Kia's just put out a new electric car, I think it's got 402. V-Dub's put one out, which is, again, up around... the 40-kilowatt one's a very big one. It all depends. Yep. A 24-kilowatt, 30-kilowatt. It's your tank size. It's whether you've got a V8 or an 1100.
Yes. Yeah, so yes, you're absolutely right. So if you've got your little 1100, you'll go a lot further, won't you?
Yeah. So it's and if you've got a V8, obviously you go faster, but you also can go further because you've got more gas in the tank. Except it's not gas.
In terms of the batteries.
You've got more electrons in your tank.
Right.
Yeah.
Right, okay. Anyway, so we are hearing about, there's big improvements. And I guess another factor is, for if buying your car secondhand, then you're looking at a much more economical price.
Well, yes, so the cars that we buy in New Zealand, in any case, we take advantage of the Japanese market. And the Japanese government incentivizes the whole of Japan to turn over their cars on a regular basis to keep their auto industry going. And they flick them on to, Sri Lanka and New Zealand because we like them. And sometimes there's a huge competition for them. And also the Japanese government disincentivizes people holding on to their cars by their registration system, which gets more expensive the older your car is. And also they have incentives for electric car. So we can buy a $70,000 car in New Zealand, a Nissan, for example, for around between $20,000 and $30,000, just because we've taken advantage of the incentives that are offered by Japan, mm-hmm. which is a good deal for us. It's a bad deal for Nissan, who choose not to sell them new in New Zealand because of that. I'm hoping that they'll change their mind on that one. Because we see BMW, Hyundai, VW, I've said that, Audi, Kia, they're all coming in with brand new cars now, and Nissan's going to look pretty silly if they're not in that picture.
Yes, because some people just like to have a new car, don't they?
They do, yeah.
The shiny car smell.
Yeah.
So... okay, we can forget that range anxiety and put that in the past. Charging points in Dunedin, is that improving?
Well, most people charge at home. So so if you've got a power point, a 3-pin plug that can reach your car and you can charge overnight, there's all the options. If you've got one in your carport, that's even better. Most people... travel only about 29 kilometres on a daily basis. So you've got, the most lowly EV I know of in Dunedin is probably about 100 with lower battery capacity. So you're not even going to be charging every day with that. But the thing that most people go, well, there's one rapid in Dunedin, and... that rapid charger is mostly for people travelling through town, or they might be doing commuting from Hamden or Wangatui or whatever. So, you're coming to town for the day, you want a rapid charge in half an hour to do all your messages and go home comfortably. And that is the beauty of rapid chargers. You kind of can do that. And there's places like the Warehouse, and other places are putting in these other charges where you which charge at a slightly lower rate, so you get another couple of bars while you're shopping there. So Great King Street's got one in its car park. So car parks, supermarkets, libraries, all DCC parks eventually will all have these things.
Okay, it's just a matter of time. So now my question I had whenever I introduced the show was about the current uptake and how which place in New Zealand has the most EVs, I guess. And I think you have an answer, don't you?
So at the moment it's definitely Auckland. So Auckland, there's an amazing rapid charge network up there, plus there's just lots more people. Coming in close behind them is Christchurch and Wellington. In October last year, we were actually second to Auckland per capita, but we've slipped to fourth at the moment. Mm-hmm. But, you know.
Yeah.
But that's a great thing, but that other bigger cities are taking those spots.
It is. And Dunedin was there near the beginning. So we're good early adopters.
Yes, yeah. Yeah. So... Right. So the Better New Zealand Trust, which runs the annual Cape Reangatū Bluff road trip, which is travel purely in electric vehicles, just to show that you can do it. They always were sort of always blown away by how many electric vehicles were here when they came through town. So. Mm-hmm. So we've done really well.
Yeah. And you'd said before we came on air that you think Waitati is very high up there in terms of a place.
I think Waitati is actually probably the per capita capital of New Zealand on EVs.
Yeah. That's great. Okay. Mm. One thing that I'm really interested in is the idea of having an EV that's owned on a community level, you know, rather than each of us having our own vehicle.
Yeah, so that is actually where the trends are going overseas. They're a wee bit odd to us at the moment, but once you've got an electric vehicle, it will teach you that these things are all possible. So the transport, the big trend in transport will be that it's no longer dependent on people owning their own cars, that they will be sharing. We won't be dependent on fossil fuels, and we'll all be sharing. So transport will become less resource intensive in that sense, because it'll be a meshing between electric and sharing and some autonomous kind of driving stuff. And transport will become more integrated with active and public transport. And we see that in big cities like Madrid, Vancouver, the UK and London now. You can drive in a certain area if you've got an EV. You have to park and drive if you've got some other kind of hideous vehicle. So the whole system's changing.
Yes.
I mean, if we invented the petrol car today, you wouldn't get it through the EPA. Mm. There's just nothing.
Yeah, that's right. It wouldn't pass. That's right. Because it's historical.
It's entrenched. It's entrenched in this kind of big oil system and that kind of status quo. Mm. But the other thing is coming really fast. Predictions are by 2030, all new cars in New Zealand that will be sold will be electric.
Wow. Okay. Mm. So we're looking at something that is going to be a thing of the future, and we'll be seeing a lot more electric cars. And one thing, I'm a bird lover, and I'm looking forward to being able to hear birds again.
Yes.
So what's coming up now? I know that you're involved in various EV things and other things as well.
So coming up, I've got an exhibition, which is an art and science exhibition for the Science Festival, and also part of Puaka Matariki, where we're looking at the carbon cycle and how it affects the ocean. And it's in the Science Festival, so it's aimed at kids. There's lots of hands-on art-making activities, and we'll have storytellers on the floor of the gallery the whole time, plus puppet shows and some Meet the Scientist sessions, and we'll have a lizard. And we'll have marine animals and tanks.
And
it's going to be cool.
Right, so there's that, and you've got Beyond Petrol.
Oh, yes, and we pack that down on Saturday, and then on Sunday we move to the Dunningham Suite, where we're going to have a panel discussion for anyone who's curious about electric vehicles. We'll be looking at what's under the bonnet of an electric vehicle, how to charge them, looking at apps, cables, all the kind of stuff that people ask us. We'll look at take a quick look at a citizen science project because we are part of the science festival. Do a wee bit of a history of the technology, and then we're actually going to have a bit of a meeting about talking about taking EVs to Cromwell. Mm-hmm. Anyone can bring their range anxiety to that one. We'll teach people how to deal with it.
Right, that's great. So that is on July 15th, 12:30 to 2 p.m. So thank you very much, Pam, for coming on the show. And if people want to connect with you, they can do it through you've got a Facebook site, haven't you?
Yes, the Facebook page is the best place to get hold of us.
So that's Dunedin EV Group. Mm-hmm. So thank you very much. And I'm sure that next time I have you on the show, we'll be inundated with electric vehicles. Okay. So, and thank you for listening. I'm Maureen Howard, and this is Eco Living in Action. And my guest today was Pam McKinley, talking about the history of the EV and where the EV is going. So, and it's looking very good. So if you'd like to listen to the show again, you can download it as a podcast from Otago Access Radio at oar.org.nz. Eco Living in Action is supported by Taste Nature.
Taste Nature is Dunedin's organic food shop and eatery at 131 High Street. Open 7 days, Taste Nature carries a wide range of certified organic primary produce and a selection of whole foods available in bulk. The eatery features seasonal organic fare made from scratch with the freshest ingredients in store. And now available, a seasonal produce box or personalised order delivered in the Dunedin area in their fully electric van. Taste Nature, online at tastenature.co.nz. And proud to be part of the Dunedin Organic Food Network.
Streaming now on planetaudio.org.nz.
The Holy Archdiocese of New Zealand of the Ecumenical Patriarchate presents In the Narthex with Father Paul Patitsis. Join him as he shares with us the ancient apostolic faith of the Christian Greek Orthodox Church. Friday afternoons from 3:15 or anytime online. planetaudio.org.nz/InTheNarthex.
Tune in and save the environment, the biota, and ultimately ourselves. With me, Tim Lynch, on Green Planet FM 104.6. Every Thursday morning, 8 until 9. A solution-oriented program that gives hope to future generations to come.
You're tuned to Planet FM 104.6, coming to you from the Sky Tower. Eco Living in Action will be back next Wednesday evening at 6 p.m. with more sustainable solutions and practical tips for green living. At 6:35, we start a segment for New AN listeners. Firstly, community news and information from Radio Pika Pika, followed by New AN Health at 7:40.